Scott Irwin, professor of agricultural economics at the University of Illinois.
Very good. And you guys have actually taken a real hard look at what's going on with the ethanol industry, ethanol plant profits. There's been talk that it's, you know, we know that during the drought, some of them shut down. But what are we looking at now across the Corn Belt in terms of ethanol plant profitability?
Right now, we're looking at the longest run of profits, at least as far back as my records go to 2007 for ethanol plants in the Midwest. They've basically been in the black for a full year now.
So, Scott, why have things turned around, and do we expect this to continue?
Very interesting question. The reason that the industry's been so profitable is kind of some surprising price trends. What's happened is that ethanol and DDGS prices have declined in the last year, but the real source of the industry's profits is that the price of corn has declined much more than the price of ethanol and DDGS, and that's where the profits are coming from.
Okay, and we expect this to continue or not?
Myself, you know, basic economics would say it would be very unusual for this to persist a lot longer, because eventually this level of profits should cause ethanol producers to expand so that you increase the supply of ethanol, which drives down the price of ethanol, more consistent with a more normal level of profits. But it's a bit of a perfect storm right now in that there's a real shortage of ethanol at the terminal level, because it's very difficult to get it there because of all the transportation snarls that we have in North America and on the rail traffic side. So ethanol prices are very high, but people can't move their product, so not everybody right now can take advantage of those high ethanol prices.
Scott, what's happening on the rail traffic side?
It's a combination of obviously everybody knows about the long, cold, difficult winter we've had, and that has really slowed rail traffic down, and it's also the cumulative effect of the increasing draw on rail resources to ship crude oil around the Canada and the middle part of the United States. And you put those two together, and it's hard to find rail cars for other uses like shipping ethanol.
So looking ahead, of course, we don't know what the crop year is going to be ahead and what that's going to do to prices for corn. But is there any way that did your study look ahead, or are you just kind of looking at what's happening now?
We were just looking at, okay, where are we up to date? Basically, the ethanol industry, I think, is in pretty good shape in the sense that unless we have a major corn production problem here in the U.S. This summer, probably set up at least for, you know, at worst, break even, and probably a modest level of profits looking forward. You know, the main threat to their profits, I think, is something that drives corn prices up really rapidly. And absent that, I think they'll be looking at a continued period of profitability, but probably not nearly as profitable as the last year. I just mentioned, it's an interesting comparison. I just released yesterday on FarmBack Daily a parallel study of the recent trends in the profitability of the biodiesel industry.
So what were the findings?
It's quite different than ethanol in that I describe the biodiesel industry seems to either be in a state of feast or famine in terms of profitability. The industry had two fantastic years in 2011 and 2013 when the percentage return to equity holders in those 2 years, in both years, exceeded 50%.
What are the factors?
Well, it basically shows that when market and policy conditions are just right, the industry, biodiesel industry, can generate some spectacular profits. But what's interesting is outside of those 2 years, the other 5 years that I looked at from 07 to 2013, cumulatively, the industry had a loss. So you're either in a really high profitability position or a long stretch of losses. So it's an industry that's very dependent on government policies as the driver of profitability. Whereas it's an interesting contrast with ethanol. Certainly government incentives through the RFS mandates play a role, and we've of course been through and are in the middle of a major discussion about the RFS and ethanol in the U.S. But even without it, ethanol has basically found a place in the market through its value as an octane additive for gasoline mixtures. In other words, if you took the government incentives currently in place for ethanol away, the ethanol industry would still be, in my view, producing somewhere near where it is right now. But if you did the same thing to biodiesel, there would be probably no biodiesel produced in the United States.
We know that, as you said, the RFS is if the EPA goes through with its proposal to reduce the RFS for ethanol, we've been hearing that it would cripple the ethanol industry, or maybe the ethanol industry has just been more vocal than biodiesel about what it would do. But and I don't have the details in front of me about how the RFS reductions would affect biodiesel. But are you saying that if that goes through, that could just sort of, well, as you said, cripple the industry? Biodiesel?
Well, biodiesel's in between. My analysis is that if the proposed rules go forward, ethanol and corn markets would be fairly market neutral the next couple years. In particular, the E10 market, which is basically saturated with ethanol now, would probably be little unchanged because blending margins for using ethanol are, even with the higher prices that we've been seeing this winter, are still very positive for gasoline blenders. So why would they quit using ethanol if the RFS went away tomorrow? And all the indications are, and you listen to the comments, the E10 market is pretty safe for ethanol with or without the RFS. So that's the source of my argument, that you take the RFS away, you would see pretty modest to almost no impacts on the ethanol market in the short run. The policy change, though, would potentially take away some future potential growth in ethanol down the road, as there would be need to implement higher blends for some of the higher mandates as we move through time. So it's more about lost potential down the road for ethanol, this rule change, than what would happen in the next year or two. Whereas for biodiesel, they're, interestingly enough, the most vulnerable as an industry to the proposed rule change compared to ethanol. And their mandate was, in the proposed rules, stayed flat. And the record is if that mandate stays flat, that industry will go back to those years when they were kind of having consistent losses.
And when you say stays flat, you mean remains the same?
Yeah, it remains the same. They were proposed at 1.28 billion gallons for 14 and 15 in the proposed rule, the same as 2013. And that kind of environment, the history that I looked at and posted yesterday shows right now that industry is back to their historical situation of per gallon some small losses of 10, 15, 20 cents a gallon. That's about what the market will pay unless there are government policies that put pressure for increased biodiesel production above that level.
Well, we've been seeing them posting over the last year or more record production numbers of biodiesel.
Mm-hmm. And correct. We saw, I believe the final figures came in around 1.8 billion gallons for 2013. So, but without a policy change, and recent production numbers would back this up, I would be surprised if 2014 production levels go above a billion gallons.
We know the comments have been submitted on that RFS. Realistically, do you have a sense of when we might hear something final?
The word that I've heard is sometime this summer. Others may have better intelligence than I do. I've also been writing in recent weeks. The RINs market is trying to tell us that at least the RINs traders think that the probability has risen rather substantially that the EPA is going to listen or has listened to the comments and the political pressure that's been put on them, and that the cuts to the ethanol mandate are likely to be rolled back. We just don't know how much.
Who do you credit that? Where did you learn that? Or is that your...
Well, you can infer it out of the movement of the RINs prices in the ethanol market.
I see.
So basically, it's kind of an on-off switch. If the traders think that the ethanol mandate will exceed the blend wall, then the ethanol and the biodiesel RIN prices should track one another very closely. And contrarily, if the traders don't think that the ethanol mandate will exceed the blend wall, in other words, it'll be equal to or less than the blend wall, then the ethanol and biodiesel RIN prices diverge. And so that's exactly what we had seen since actually starting last July. The ethanol and the biodiesel RIN prices had diverged sharply. But then in very late January, they came rather suddenly back together in a pattern indicative of the market expecting the ethanol mandate to once again exceed the blend wall. So that's how I inferred it. I inferred it directly out of the movements of the ethanol and biodiesel RINs, not any inside information or intelligence out of D.C., nothing like that. It's purely based on inferring the implications of the relative movements in the RINs market.
Okay.
Now, I think somebody in the RINs market knows what's going on, and I'm just picking that up from the signals in the market prices.
Scott, would you have anything else to add? You covered really the big picture for us and some of the details.
No, I just, the one thing that I think in all of the really intense discussion and debating about the EPA's proposed rulemaking for 2014 got lost in the noise was, you know, right now the good financial health of the ethanol production industry with corn prices back below $5 makes ethanol very competitive up to the 10% blend mark in our domestic gasoline markets. And at the same time, it's made it very competitive in world export markets. So even without the support of the RFS mandate, I think the outlook is reasonably bright for the U.S. ethanol industry right now.